talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Howard Balzer joining us on the HRP guest line. Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Howard, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with the Killer Bees this afternoon. We just spent the last hour kind of remembering Mike Leach, and plenty to get to in the NFL, but I want to start with Mike, especially you being close to the Arizona situation. Former quarterback Cliff Kingsbury, of course, the head coach with Arizona. How is Cliff? How are the rest of the Cardinals kind of taking the news of Mike Leach's passing?
Yeah, it was real interesting because last night, of course, we got word kind of during the game that he had passed. And then some of us were debating, well, boy, you know, obviously we didn't know how the game was going to turn out. Do we ask Cliff about that after the game? I mean, we would think he would have known. We don't know when he was told or things like that. Well, it turned out no one asked him. And then he did issue a statement this morning, you know, talking about how much he meant to him in his playing career there at Texas State and how, you know, how crushing it was to, you know, to get the news. So, yeah, that's a tough one for him and for Cliff and certainly everyone who came in contact with, you know, with Mike Leach, all of us in the media. I never really had interaction with him, and you read the stuff that went on and what a unique personality. And you just see something like that and you go, man, it's just once again just wakes us up, I guess, to a degree, is it how, boom, things can just be gone in a second. And that's certainly the case with that unfortunate, tragic story yesterday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then you've got more devastating news circulating in your backyard, Howard, and that is the news becoming official. What we all could pretty much sense was reality when he took the step on the third play of the game last night, Kyler Murray with the ACL injury. Just a tough, tough situation for the kid with all the scrutiny this year after signing the new contract and you being right in the middle of it. I'm sure it's a very somber mood in and around that football team right now.
Yeah, it definitely is. And just to see that happen, and of course on the third play of the game, not that it matters what play it was, but for it to happen so early and could just tell that this was not good. And then as a team, you have to try and, you know, somehow just keep playing, which is, that's the law of the jungle, law of the NFL. But it's, you know, still a tough one. You know, one of the things that I sort of, you know, I have this term, guys, it's called collective amnesia. And I think it enters a lot of the discourse at many times where people forget what they say one thing then one day and then forget what they and totally forget it when they say something opposite the next day. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of weird in the whole thing. Of course, here there's so many people already debating, well, what's this going to mean for the Cardinals in the offseason? What does it mean for next year? What do you do? Da, 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 da. You know, all those things. But then those who were talking about how ugly it'll probably be for the Cardinals in these last four games are the same people that a few weeks ago after the Cardinals beat a pretty bad Rams team, and Colt McCoy, you know, played solid in what he's capable of doing. And there were people saying, well, man, Colt McCoy, he should be the quarterback instead of Kyler Murray. I mean, he should be the guy. Now everyone's saying how ugly it's going to be because Colt McCoy will be the quarterback for the rest of the season. So it's, you know, all the different thoughts and narratives that are all over the landscape. But it's still obviously still tough when you have a guy that has had some injuries throughout his career with the Cardinals and now certainly the most major one. And but it does raise the questions about next year. When can he come back? And you know, no one really knows. I love all the amateur doctors out there who think how long, you know, think they know how long it's going to be. Every person's different. Every person hits that rehab different, and that'll be a big part of Kyler Murray and coming back from this. But complicating it somewhat, you know, you can make the argument, well, quarterbacks maybe can come back a little sooner, but a guy like Kyler Murray who needs his legs to be the type of player he is, you do wonder about that. And most of the time, the school of thought is it real? You can come back in less than a year a lot of times, but most everyone says that you don't really feel yourself until 2 years after an ACL injury. So yeah, it's, you know, it's a tough one for him, the team, and all this, like you said, all the stuff swirling around this team with so much of the fan base, at least the vocal fan base, saying, oh, this team should start over fire the GM, fire Cliff Kingsbury, all these thoughts. And now people are even thinking that more. Well, if you're not going to have Murray, there's people even suggesting already to trade DeAndre Hopkins. What's the point of having him next season if Kyler Murray's not going to be available? So
maybe David Johnson's on the market, Howard Balzer. They could get David Johnson back. Howard Balzer, our guest on the HRMP.
Or you know line. Benjamin.
he's available too. He got a cup of coffee with the Texans, and now he's gone. That's a great point. Howard, the Texans, speaking of the Texans, they played a football game this past weekend, and they were competitive, as competitive as they have been in a while. Even with that competitiveness, I said that it was an embarrassment, the way that they played. 50% quarterback split with Davis Mills, who the Texans have quit on because they already benched him, and then whenever he got the job back, they only played him half the game. And then they went with that Jeff Driscoll, Wildcat, Driscoll Cat, whatever you want to call it. And look, it kept them in the game. I think it's fine if you're trying to win one game, scheming it up for one game. I think it's embarrassing to play football that way, though, and it admits that you are lousy compared to the team that you're playing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it totally admits if you're not lousy, but certainly admits that you don't have a quarterback. And you know, it's one thing to put a guy in there for a play or two. Hey, let's be real. I mean, the Saints were doing that with Taysom Hill for a time when they had Drew Brees. Now, granted, Drew Brees was at the end of his career and he's a Hall of Famer, but they were still doing that to take advantage of the things that Hill can do. So I think, you know, in small doses, maybe okay, but essentially from the Texans standpoint, it's obviously saying we don't know if Davis Mills is our quarterback. We don't know who it's going to be going forward. And obviously you guys are going to be talking about that a lot. Talking about it now, much less when the season ends and we enter that, you know, January, February, you know, 4 month draft, you know, run up to the draft and all the speculation that there'll be about what they will do, what they should do, and all those things.
Howard, how do you see the NFC playing out? Because it's really interesting right now. You've got Dallas, as Jeremy mentioned, who barely beat the Texans. You've got the Eagles who are rolling and continue to crush people as you've got basically the MVP front runner right there in Jalen Hurts. And then you've got a team like San Francisco that suffers the injury to Debo, suffers the injury to Jimmy G. But you've got a rookie quarterback, inexplicably, who looks like he's in complete and total control, doing things. That defense is so good that it's hard to count the Niners out no matter what injuries they have.
No, you're 100% right. And it's not only the defense, it's the running game. And that's the thing when you can get – maybe get by is not a fair way of putting it, but you can be functional with a young quarterback, whoever it might be, when you can run the ball the way they do. And the 49ers really have always been in this time with Jimmy Garoppolo or not, have been a run first team. And it seems like it's just kind of like the Denver Bronco teams with Mike Shanahan, Kyle's father, and their style of running and the way they did it. Doesn't matter who they put in there at running back, they're able to be productive with it. And now you have a Christian McCaffrey who's the lead guy, and that makes them even better. And so that is a team that I was saying to someone last night, I was going, you know, we still have to see how Brock Purdy does in the postseason, and that will be the next big question. I was saying after this game, everyone was anointing him after this game Sunday, and he did a nice job, no turnovers, passed for 185 yards. And so I even tweeted out my disappointment. I'm disappointed because in 20 years, when Brock, approximately 20 years, when Brock Purdy comes up as a first time eligible for the Hall of Famer, for the Hall of Fame, I probably won't be voting, because I'll be too old. You know, that was the Bill Parcells line when people would ask him about a young guy, like they were thinking he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And he'd say, hey, let's tap the brakes on the Hall of Fame talk. But anyway, we have to see how he does in the postseason. But boy, can you imagine a Philadelphia San Francisco game in the postseason? What a matchup that would be, with strength against strength and all those things. That would be, you know, just a heck of a game. They probably are right now the two best teams in the NFC, with the asterisk of seeing how Purdy handles the postseason. But there's no reason to believe he won't have the ice in his veins to go out there in the postseason and just say, hey, yeah, there's a lot at stake, but it's just another football game. And that's probably the way he'll try to approach it. As long as he doesn't turn it over, then they're going to be fine.
Howard, always appreciate the conversation. Enjoy week 15 in the NFL.
All right, guys, take care.
Howard Balzer joining us on the HRMP guest line, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Always enjoy the visits with Mr. Balzer. All right, the Houston Astros. You can kiss this whole idea of the starting catcher upgrade goodbye. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Been telling you about them for years now because they make a difference in people's lives like mine, and they can do the same thing for you too. And it doesn't matter what you're dealing with. They can help you get the results that you want to get to. Someone that you know very well that is on these airwaves has lost over 45 pounds, I believe it is now, thanks in part to the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Want to get on a workout program? Want to lose some weight? Want to recover quicker? Want to get more energy in your life on a daily basis? All you got to do is get in touch with the people at Apollo Men's Health. They're going to get you on a program that works and make sure that it monitors your results and tells you exactly where you are on a day-by-day and week-by-week basis. All you need to do is go to apollomh.com. And when you look at their website, you'll find a variety of different services. If there's anything or several services that you think could help you, set up an appointment. When you set up that appointment, go in with an open mind. Answer their questions honestly. They're going to get you results. They're going to get you on a program. They're going to get you where you want to go. They are fantastic people because they care about their patients. Check them out and mention my name, Joel Blank. You can get a free body composition analysis on your first official visit or a free B12 shot, which I get every week. If you want energy in your life, you start with a B12 shot. If you think you want to go to a little bit something different and maybe stronger, then you go with all the different varieties of hormone therapy. They have a multitude of ways that you can administer it, and you can find that kind of extra energy on a daily basis to win the day. Check them out and tell them I sent you by. They're good people doing great things. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. All right, you can kiss the whole starting catcher upgrade goodbye, which I don't think we were ever over the moon that the Astros had to do that. In fact, we told you that he did. The catcher upgrade would be more of a luxury than a necessity. We're way more on the left field DH train, where you've got to get one more bat there. But if you were on that bandwagon, upgraded catcher, of course, it started with Wilson Contreras. It moved on to Sean Murphy. He was traded yesterday. And then the final salvo, like the cherry on top, that it was not going to happen, was the reported signing of Christian Vasquez with the Minnesota Twins. Maybe bringing him with Carlos Correa, if the Twins can get that done. But the market right now, Blankers, that whole idea of a catcher upgrade, replace the Martin Maldonado bat in the lineup, it looks like the thought of that is long gone.
Yeah, you and I prioritize corner outfielder slash extra bat DH as the next move that they should make. But we also at least had kicked the can down the road a little bit about the potential for all the different catcher options, simply because we were told over and over again that they were interested in Wilson Contreras, and then it kind of steamrolled from there. But I was very disappointed, I'm not going to lie, when I saw that the report late last night that it looked like Vasquez had reached an agreement with the Twins, because I was still holding out hope that that was the guy, that after one more year of Maldi or however they worked it out, that he would still be the catcher for the Houston Astros for the next 2 years after that and be that same kind of perfect fit in the locker room, on the field, and whatever he was asked to do here. So with him going and Murphy being traded yesterday, yeah, I just don't see, and Contreras signing with the Cardinals, I don't see them looking at catcher anymore the way that they probably were previously. And they know that they've got two young, good catching prospects that they can bring up to back up Maldi. If not, they can look at other options. Varsho's not an option to me because, I consider him more of an outfielder than a catcher. And two, I don't want them to give up anything to go get anybody at this point, because you can still play the free agency game and get what you need. And if you're not, you know, as long as you don't have to give up anything and you can go get your corner outfielder and DH type, you know, maybe later on down the road, if you see a need for a catcher, you can do what you did last year and make another trade before the deadline. But I think you're right. The ship has passed. They're not looking at catcher.
Yeah, somebody just texted us in, said that Omar Narvaez, I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, but the catcher for the Brewers, who is a free agent. Last year was the final year of his deal. He's a free agent. He's out on the open market. I just pulled up his numbers real quick. Somebody that you're really like writing home about. Narvaez.
That's why the Brewers got Omar Contreras' Narvaez. Little brother from the Braves. as part of that three-way deal yesterday.
Yeah.
Because they weren't too pleased with
him. Well, he's a free agent. So, like, you might not have been thinking about bringing him back. Last year, he didn't play a whole lot. He hit .206 a year ago, .597 OPS. Now, 2 years ago, he was an all-star. He was an all-star for Milwaukee. Now, .266 average, .743 OPS, 11 home runs. Every other year has been kind of okay. 22 home runs and 19 as a Mariner. That wouldn't, like, I don't think you're signing him to be your everyday catcher. And in fact, the name that I'm hearing that could be coming to Houston to be the veteran catcher is Tucker Barnhart. So that's not somebody that's really moving the needle a whole lot. I'd even be okay if you're going into the season with Jiner Diaz and Corey Lee. Whoever wins the battle in spring training is your backup catcher. Astros might not want to go that route because Maldonado had some injury concerns last year. He's a year older. But I never really felt that the Astros were going to sign Christian Vasquez. Like, Christian Vasquez wasn't even a starter last year. What gives you the impression he's going to be a starter next year? Why would the Astros spend $10 million on the backup to Martin Maldonado?
The price at 10. I had heard, and ESPN, when they first started, the rumors of where players would go and what their price tag would be was in the 7 range. I mean, if you could get him for 2 or 3 at 7 a year, that makes sense. But if you're going to overpay and give him 10 a year for 3 years at his age, I don't think that makes sense for the Houston Astros. I know that Montero got a little bit more, and that's the first contract with Crane doing it that we questioned a little bit in terms of overpaying a bit. But other than that, I think that's where it stops and ends. And he did 3 years with Abreu. But I look at that and say, okay, I don't think that he was going to go 10 a year at 3 years for Vasquez. So that basically sealed the deal. If that was what another team was willing to offer, then the Astros knew right then and there, he's not in our plans anymore.
Especially if he was your backup last year. Like, it's one thing to spend $10 million a year on a catcher that you feel is going to be your everyday catcher. Dusty Baker made the decision a year ago that Christian Vasquez was not going to be his everyday catcher.
A year ago, but then the quote that he had with the winter meetings was the fact that, look, that was then, and we're open to anything and upgrading the catcher for this season. I'm with you, though. I think that Pawpaw's gut feeling still says that Maldi's his guy. But, I mean, I think he had to say that because he knew that his owner and the guys behind the scenes were pushing for Contreras and or an upgrade, especially offensively at catcher.
Yeah, I think that if you thought Christian Vasquez was going to be the starting catcher, I think you would have paid him $30 million for 3 years. I think the Astros would have done that if they viewed Vasquez as the everyday guy.
Okay, but this is where we get into, and we've talked about, they've got to keep one eye on the future while they keep the other eye firmly on the here and now because they're so in the present competing for World Series. But you know that Maldi's only got one more year left.
Mm-hmm.
And at his age and the way he's been breaking down and his size alone, you got to believe that after this year, forward thinking, you got to have a frontline starting catcher that's at least above average defensively and decent offensively. And I don't know that they are convinced that either one of the young guys is there yet. So that's where Vasquez could have made sense. You and I talked about, hey, you know, you work something out kind of like your plan was for Contreras, but he gets a certain amount of pitchers and or starts behind the plate during the week. He also can find some time at DH, move, you know, and do some other
Vasquez?
Things.
Vasquez?
Yeah, you could have.
I don't think Vasquez hits well enough to be getting DH at bats.
I do.
He's got like a .750 OPS. I actually think it was lower than that.
He was one of the top hitting catchers in baseball, but
the top hitting catchers are like the bottom level DHs.
I'm not saying he's a legit everyday DH, but I'm saying if you were trying to, you know, seriously find a way to make it work for 3 years, but the first year still do a little bit more than what he was doing last year, but not be the starting catcher. And I'm not saying that Dusty was going to be open to that. I'm not saying they considered that, but I was a fan enough of Vasquez, and I believe both offensively and defensively, he is one of the better catchers in the game that I would have loved to see him come back.
I don't disagree with your admiration for Vasquez as a catcher. Now, I disagree about him getting like a decent amount of at-bats.
I don't want him a decent amount of at-bats. I said a game or two here or there during the week.
I believe, though, like if you believe that Vasquez would be your starting catcher next year over Martin Maldonado, if you believe that and that is your philosophy, that's your theory, whenever you're talking contract with Christian Vasquez, mm-hmm. and you're selling Christian Vasquez, look, we promise you, you're going to be our primary catcher. You're going to start 120 games behind the dish, 110 games behind the dish. Maldonado's going to be your backup. If you are operating with that mindset, wouldn't you have given Vasquez $30 million for 3 years?
You might.
I would have.
But maybe, you know, one, I think first and foremost, where this probably starts and ends is the fact that Vasquez wanted to be that guy this year and every year.
I think if you told Vasquez, and you're operating with the same mindset as Vasquez, you're our starter next year. and the Astros said that you're our starter and we're going to match Minnesota's contract, I think he's an Astro today.
I don't think so.
Why?
Because I think that what I've heard all along, and even some of the things that he was putting on social media, was about that he
put
is,
a picture of the earth.
but he's a starting catcher. He's a starting catcher, and right. He wants to catch every day. And I think starting catchers, as they are at this point in their career, if they take a year off of being
that's
the
not
everyday.
That's what I'm suggesting. That's not the proposal I just suggested. The proposal what I just suggested is that you're telling Vasquez you're our everyday starter now. As soon as we sign you, now you're getting every guarantee.
Oh, I thought you meant
year
you split time with
Baldy.
No.
I'm saying
next
right
year.
Now, this offseason, you tell Christian Vasquez everything Minnesota told Christian Vasquez. You're our everyday starter. You're catching 120 games. That's how many starts normal primary catchers get because they usually take one every fifth day off. They start about 120 games. You're our dude. Martin Maldonado is your backup. We're gonna offer you 3 years, $30 million, 10 years average AAV. Don't you think he would have signed that to stay in Houston than Minnesota?
If he's the starter, yeah, absolutely.
Right. But, and that's kind of the like what I'm operating with. Like if we both are telling, you and I are the assistant general managers, or Jeff Bagwell's our boss with the Killer Bees, and we're telling Christian Vasquez, look, you're going to be our primary catcher. Wouldn't you be willing to give up $30 million for 3 years? Because I would.
I would. I mean, I would think, and I think he's worth that. And I think that, he's a guy that when you have the money that you didn't have to spend on Verlander, you've got plenty of money before you get to the tax where you could spend to get a guy like that. Maybe they didn't think as highly of him as I do, and I it sounds like you do. And I don't know if they have another plan in mind, or they're just that confident and they believe in one of the young kids is going to be that guy. And he's not going to be the starter this year, but he's going to get his feet wet for a full season, and then when Maldi's done after this year, he's going to be ready to take the reins, and I'm not so sure I believe that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what the minor leaguer is going to look like in a year, right? I mean, we didn't really know a whole lot about Hunter Brown or Jeremy Pena a year ago, or Kyle Tucker. Well, Kyle Tucker we knew a little bit more about, and he kind of struggled a little bit out of the gate. I don't hate the idea of Yiner Diaz and Corey Lee being the catcher in 2024. Now, that's pretty far in advance, but what it tells me that Christian Vasquez signed with Minnesota, what that tells me is the Astros never told Christian Vasquez,
yeah, sure.
You're our primary catcher, right, 2023.
For sure.
Because I think they would have paid Vasquez if they viewed Vasquez as the primary catcher over now, Maldonado as soon as this season.
The interesting thing to me would have been, what the conversations when they had with Contreras, did they tell him that?
See, I think Contreras was more of a work share. I don't think that Contreras would have been the primary catcher. Because I think Martin Maldonado would have started more games than Wilson Contreras in 23 if they signed Wilson Contreras.
I'm trying to match up Dusty's comments from the winter meetings with what we were, with what conversations they would have had with Contreras, and or if there's any other catchers that they might have considered in that same vein of, looking to upgrade catcher. And you're probably right that they probably didn't talk to Contreras about being a 120-game catcher.
Yeah. See, I mean, the quote that we have was Crane saying that we could always get better at catcher or whatever, and then Bagwell also mentioned catcher. But upgrading at catcher doesn't mean that it's a new primary catcher. Like, if you start 100 games for Martin Maldonado and then your backup's Wilson Contreras for 62 games, that's better than Maldonado and Corey Lee. So, that doesn't necessarily mean starter, and I think that the Astros, with Christian Vasquez going to Minnesota, I think it's evident that the Astros never told Vasquez that he'd be their primary guy, and I think if they did, they would have paid him the $30 million. 713-780-ESPN. And how do you want the Astros to handle that catcher spot? 713-780-3776. Also, these Dalton Varsho rumors are out there. Bob Nightingale reporting the Astros are in talks with Arizona. Are you open to that, and are you willing to pay the price? Because everybody's got a price for the $1 million man. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Astros don't have a catcher. They didn't sign a free agent catcher. They didn't trade for a catcher. They have Martin Maldonado. 713-780-ESPN. Someone's asking us who do the Astros have at prospect as a prospect to catch? They have two. We saw both of them last year. Corey Lee, Yiner Diaz. Neither one really impressed in their short stints as Houston Astros. But Corey Lee, former first round draft pick, the Astros, Major League Baseball people think that Corey Lee can be a good catcher someday. Somebody said he's the next JT Realmuto, which is lofty, lofty expectations.
That's
I'm not going that far.
A little far-fetched right now.
I would agree with that. And then Yiner Diaz, he was in the Miles Straw trade. He was the catcher acquired from the Guardians for Miles Straw in addition with Phil Maton. Now, there is some doubt of whether he can handle the catcher position defensively long term. There's some questions if he's good enough defensively to play back there. There's some thought that he might have to be a first baseman long term. I'm of the opinion that Diaz's bat is above average for the catcher spot, but below average at first base. So how he progresses defensively is pretty much the value of what you have as a major leaguer.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that, look, you're in a different position than most other teams, too, in the fact that, yeah, you've got two prospects that you can continue to see develop and you can see what they offer, but you're trying to win a World Series every single year, and you've got to take, you know, into consideration the fact that your backup can't be a kid that you just don't know what to expect from. And in the small doses that we've seen of both guys, you have some question marks. And I think with Diaz, it's more, can he handle the load catching? Because he's a stick if he gets comfortable, but he didn't look comfortable at the major league level. And Corey Lee looks like he struggles to hit the baseball at the major league level.
Most rookies do.
Yeah, and I get
like,
that.
I mean, Kyle Tucker was not good at it. Alex Bregman was not good at it. Craig Biggio was awful at it whenever he was a rookie.
That relates back to what I'm saying. If you're just a team on the, you know, you're Arizona, well, then you can let them work it out, get comfortable, and whenever they get comfortable and start hitting the baseball, that's fine. Whereas you might have a more pressing need for a guy that can just plug and play right away when you're trying to compete for a World Series.
I would agree with that at every other position, because I don't think that if Jiner Diaz or Corey Lee had 500 plate appearances that they would produce as poorly as Martin Maldonado.
No, I don't know that anybody really could do that.
That's kind of the point, though. Like, every other position, I agree with you. But if it was the catcher position, like, that's the one position where even if they're not very good offensively, it's still probably an upgrade.
But I think that the other side of the equation is, as a receiver, I don't know that Diaz has got a firm grasp on it enough to be your everyday catcher. And from Corey Lee's perspective, as good as he may someday be, I don't know that he has the respect and the ability to control the pitching staff like a veteran would when you have this young of a pitching staff.
No, I completely agree. Defensively, I don't think either one's ready to be the everyday guy. It's going to be Maldonado.
And if Maldi breaks down, that's the problem. You got to turn to your backup on a more consistent basis, and you need a guy that's going to be able to do those things.
713-780-ESPN. I think they signed a veteran catcher, honestly.
I think you're probably right.
I think it's going to be Tucker Barnhart. Big C said, would you be upset that they let Vasquez walk if Maldi turns out worse this year than last year? I just don't know where you're going to see a lot of decline from Martin Maldonado, because like the decline offensively already exists. It's already there. I really don't see him going like much further back. Where you would see decline from Maldonado is defensively, but like a lot of Maldonado's defensive prowess isn't that he's like limber. It's not that he's quick. It's one, he's got a pretty good pop time. He's fine like receiving the baseball. His biggest value is framing. Handling a pitching staff.
And
I don't even think framing, honestly.
I think he's one of the best at framing, but I think that you're right. Handling the pitching staff. And look, I think the machete for a reason, he's great throwing runners out. And people didn't realize that Vasquez was right there with him in terms of defensively throwing runners out. But I think that the combo platter of everything he brings to the table defensively is why, you know, we've grown to love this guy. And it starts with his ability to almost be a psychologist. I mean, the work he put in with Fromber on a pitch, you know, a game by game basis in terms of getting his head right, getting him to refocus, getting him to take the emotion out of it a little bit when he got way too hot about calls or situations. And he did it with Garcia too and Urquidy. The biggest thing for me when he takes a step back is his health. He's not a pillar of physical fitness as it is, and he's a big dude. And with the injuries he's coming off of and that he's been through, and at an older age, I would think that the breakdowns are going to be more frequent.
Yeah. He was not healthy last year. The sports hernia, they talked about, what was it? He was playing through like a hand injury.
A broken hand.
Yeah, which I kind of question that.
Well, you can put a plate in the glove.
Yeah, but if you're a catcher and you have a broken bone in your left hand, I question the validity of that.
I have a question about where Jamie's coming from, because I don't know if you've outright said it, but it at least sounds like you're kind of implying. Maldon, you literally cannot downgrade from Maldonado by staying with Maldonado.
I don't think so.
Kind of what you're saying.
At least offensively. Offensively, for sure.
It's like just a funny thought. I don't even totally disagree with it. The one thing would be power, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
But
I
generally think the point you're making is fair. It's just kind of funny. You're basically saying that Maldonado has reached his floor.
He had a career high for home runs. He was putrid from an average perspective.
He actually improved, though, from 21.
But then you had to keep hearing about how he was, you know, studying and working and in the cages on his game offensively all the time. And the biggest positive that you can say is he had pop. But other than that, there were short stints when he'd make decent contact, but it just didn't ever look like he cared enough when I saw him.
I think he cares. I think Martin Maldonado doesn't care about trying to be good.
But I've seen him throw a lot of at bats away when he's with two outs and he's just like, he's got to get back out there. It just looks like a lot of times there's at bats that are just throwaways.
I think that you see that from bad offensive players. And Martin Maldonado is a bad offensive player. And I think Martin Maldonado, he is who he is offensively. He's never been a good offensive player in his entire career. Has he had some years that were better than others? Yeah. But the dude's a lifetime 209 hitter, a lifetime 634 OPS that's about to be 36 years old. Like, you're not going to get a good offensive year from Martin Maldonado. I don't think that the Astros care about that, and quite frankly, I don't care a ton about that. I think the most important thing to have with a catcher is somebody who gives you trust defensively. And now Martin Maldonado is not bulletproof, because I think there's times Martin Maldonado would get a little bit lazy defensively and allow some pass balls and wild pitches that didn't have to be allowed because Martin Maldonado feels he has that cachet. And a lot of times they weren't like in meaningful situations, meaningful spots. So he would kind of pick and choose whenever that laziness would come up. But where you would see decline in Maldonado that would be kind of upsetting or lower the efficiency of what you're getting from a win total from an Astros perspective is defensively. But even defensively, his best value isn't necessarily his framing, isn't his pop time. Yes, those are good, but it's how he sees a game through with a young pitching staff and has the best pitching. Last year he had the best catching ERA in all of baseball. Why? Probably because the Astros pitching staff is very good, but Martin Maldonado's value is his wisdom and his ability to catch a game, manage a game with a young pitching staff, and the Astros have tremendous value in that with this old-school mindset that they have. Dusty Baker loves that about Martin Maldonado. The Astros also had Christian Vasquez last year, and even with Christian Vasquez being with the Astros for the last 60 games, 70 games, whatever it was, in the most important games in the playoffs, Martin Maldonado was catching more games than he wasn't.
Look, I mean, Correa has documented it. He's a student of the game, and when he becomes most studious is the extra work that he puts in that evidently most catchers don't do to the level and degree that he does in terms of breaking down every hitter and every pitch to every hitter and going through each pitcher's, you know, times through the rotation and what the hitters see. And there's, from an analytical approach, that's more modern day baseball, and that's effective, and he's proven it's effective. And that's basically the reason why the pitching staff, first and foremost, before you even get to a Dusty or a James Click or whoever else has a say-so in the matter, want Martin Maldonado behind them, back behind the plate when they're pitching, because they believe that this guy has the intangibles that they need when they're pitching, from being a psychiatrist to knowing exactly what to throw to guys, what not to throw to guys, and being an above-average defensive catcher.
Yeah, how could the Astros ever get over that Carlos Correa mound visits? I don't know how the Astros are ever going to be able to recover from that, losing the mound visits into the of mound Carlos visit. Correa, because Maldi makes mound visits.
I'm not even talking about the mound visits, though. I mean, he's talking about, like, he's documented both on the TNT coverage, but he also did it in a separate interview where he said, I think when he was still with the Astros, where he said he walked into the Maldi's hotel room one day in the middle of the day, and he just had all these stats laid out and the, you know, like a lineup, and was just, you know, extensively breaking down every hitter and how to pitch to him. And he's like, that's what really caught his eye about how much extra that people don't know he does.
Right. I get that. It's a separate thing. Like, I was just making fun of how the Astros were never going to get over the leadership loss of Carlos Correa, and they can never replace the value of the
mound. What are the Twins going to do if they can't resign them? It's going to be tough.
You know, they might miss the playoffs again.
Maybe Vasquez becomes that mound visit guy.
Actually, they made the playoffs, didn't they? No, they almost did. They were in the hunt, but they didn't make it. 2727, would you DH for Maldi and let a pitcher hit instead? Absolutely
no
not.
Way.
Absolutely. Unless you had Zach Greinke or Shohei Ohtani.
That shows you how bad Maldi is at the plate, though, if you'd even consider that.
No one would consider that except for 2727. Or if you have Zach Greinke.
CC Sabathia, if he was still available.
Mike Hampton.
Could hit. Yeah, the Bulldog could hit.
Babe Ruth. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get to the Dalton Varsho conversation. How much would you be willing to pay for Dalton Varsho? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you again about Doc Linville. Look, if you're struggling with hair loss, if you've got thinning areas or you're balding, and you don't think there's anything you can do about it, there really is. It's called the NeoGraft procedure, and if you haven't looked into it, you need to, because you can do so for free because you're a listener of ESPN 97.5. The NeoGraft procedure, quite simply, is taking hair where you have a ton of it. Genetically, you're never going to lose it on the sides and the back, so they take every third or fourth follicle, and they move it to where you need it most. Sometimes it's on top in the back. Sometimes it's your hairline, and regardless of where you need it, they take care of it. The NeoGraft procedure not only takes your own hair and puts it where you need it, but that hair is going to grow and thicken and get stronger and be there for the long haul. And it's all because of doctors that are like know what they're doing with the NeoGraft procedure. There's no one better than my friend, Doc Linville. Check him out today. Go to 975hair.com. See what I'm talking about. Set up an appointment. It's free for you instead of $150. Ask all the questions. Find out if it's right for you, because if you do, it could be a game changer, and you could have more self-confidence on a daily basis and an overall better appearance. I got the NeoGraft procedure done. I couldn't be happier with it. So did John Granato and Jake Asman, Fred Fowler. Be the next in line to check it out and see if it's right for you. It's amazing. Just go to 975hair.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
4683, we were talking about Dalton Varsho, and like what you'd be willing to give. 4683, I wouldn't make the trade. The proven arm talent's more valuable than a high strikeout catcher with no playoff experience. You don't even know what the trade is. Like, what trade? What trade is there for 683? It always comes down to the price.
Jeremy!
What if I said you could get Dalton Varsho for Forrest Whitley?
I'm not trading Yordan Alvarez, Christian Javier, and Dusty Baker. Well, come on!
I mean, don't threaten me with a good time. The last part there. I'm kidding. Dusty Baker and I are on good terms. I might buy a Dusty Baker shirt. I don't know. Maybe I could be talked into it. But, yeah, you don't even know the trade, 4683. I'm assuming that you probably saw what Michael Schwab put on Twitter. We're talking about the Nightingale says the Astros are interested, and then Schwab kind of mentioned the who Varsho is. Varsho would be an incredible get for the Astros if the trade happens. He can play outfield at an elite level, can catch, OPS of 109, 27 homers in 22. It will cost a lot, said Michael Schwab at Michael Schwab 13. At least Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, or Hunter Brown, and more prospects.
No,
so that's probably where that text is coming from.
No, thank you.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't, but that's why I didn't ask that question. I didn't say, would you give up Garcia, Javier, or Brown for Dalton Varsho? Because I know that question is going to lead to a resounding no. I don't think anybody in this city would say yes to that. But what is the most you would give up for a Dalton Varsho?
Well, I mean, I would give up one of the two catcher options that you have right now because there's not going to be room for all those catchers unless you believe that Yadier Diaz is going to play somewhere else besides catcher. And, you know, their farm system just isn't stockpiled with a ton of talent. But, you know, if you want to talk about non-major league type talent that Arizona might be interested in, then we can talk and have that discussion. Just after losing Verlander and knowing how good this pitching staff is, I don't need it to be a little thinner, a little less in terms of depth and talent. And even when, as it relates to an Urquidy who came up in the Contreras discussions, I think that ship has sailed, and I don't believe the hopes and aspirations of how good Varsho can be is going to be a Wilson Contreras type where I'm going to consider giving up one of my top starting pitchers.
The biggest issue that I have with this is I don't think that the Astros view Dalton Varsho as the everyday catcher. I think they view Dalton Varsho in the same way that they viewed Wilson Contreras, where they actually think Dalton Varsho is more of a left fielder DH than he is a catcher, and he's the backup to Martin
Maldonado.
Did he
not play some center as well for
Arizona
last year?
He played some center. I don't think he's a center fielder. He did play some center in a pinch, but he's more of a corner outfielder. He started off as a catcher. His bat's like good enough to move away from the catcher position. He's a solid catcher. But I don't think that the Astros view him as a catcher. I think they view him more as a left field DH. He's starting whatever percentage of times that Yordan Alvarez is not the left fielder in left field. He might start a game or two behind the dish whenever you need to give Martin Maldonado a day off. But he would start more games as the left field DH than the catcher, in my opinion.
He also gives you kind of what I was talking about. One eye on the future is one eye, as well as one eye on the here and now, because he could continue to develop to where when you see the next generations of Astros baseball, I mean, he's young enough to where he can be there for a while and do the things you need him to do.
Sure. What do you mean by that, though? Like, new generation, like just part of the new foundation?
No. I mean, you know, Brantley's getting older. You know, you see some of these guys, they're going to have a tough decision in a couple of years with Tucker. But you know what? You want, as you know, Altuve's getting older, Bregman's getting older. Their contracts in about 2 years are going to be decision makers for you. But when you start getting some younger-based talent to get mixed in with the veterans of the Altuves and the Bregmans and the Abreus and guys like that, he's a guy that could help kind of continue that run longer than the next 2 to 3 years.
He played more center field than I thought, and actually played it pretty well, by the way. So maybe that gives you another option there as well. I thought you meant more like he's the replacement for Maldonado and Maldonado leaves, but you meant more as the young foundation.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't think they acquire Dalton Varsho. First off, I don't think they acquire Dalton Varsho. But secondly, if they do acquire him, I don't think it's to replace Martin Maldonado. I think he is one of your corner outfielders, and then he's like an emergency center fielder, emergency catcher.
And I was thinking about it because I had seen him play, you know, when I'm scanning the channels, I've seen him play center field, I want to say frequently, but I've seen him multiple times when I've seen him.
He started 40 games there, 42 games this year.
Okay, but then my thought would be, with a new general manager and or the guys that are in place right now, like Bagwell and Reggie and Furkus, do they have the same kind of admiration for Jake Myers as James Click did? And if they don't, then could you see Varsho be a guy, much kind of like a Chaz, center, corner, but a guy that they're going to play frequently in both spots because they believe in him a lot more than they're going to believe in kind of the center fielder of the future, Jake Myers, that James Click used to refer to Myers.
Like, yeah. I don't know what Myers' future is with the Astros. I think that he's going to be on the opening day roster. I don't think he has much trade value right now.
No, not trade because he's been injured too much.
Right. I don't see a scenario where he's not.
But I don't know that he's going to be the long-term solution at center field.
I think he's got a better chance to be the long-term center fielder than Chaz does.
Well, but Chaz is more of a, I don't want to say journeyman, but because Chaz really stepped up last year. But I think Chaz is who Chaz is always going to be, whereas I think there's a higher ceiling for Jake if he's healthy. We saw a really encouraging young prospect that everybody was excited about before Jake got hurt.
Yeah.
And then once Jake got hurt and continued to get hurt, we also saw a lot of things that kind of changed your current perspective of him. But like I said, the old general manager thought he was and labeled him the center fielder of the future. I don't know if that's going to be the case going forward. And if I'm Jake Myers in my camp, I'd be a little concerned about that.
I mean, Myers, all he can do is play.
He's got to get healthy. More so than anything else, if he comes in healthy and he can get rid of kind of like the what he was dealing with mentally, with kind of like that PTSD with warning track and or from when he's at the plate when he looked really overmatched, then I think he overcomes everything he needs to and just be himself.
He needs to call Fromber's guy. Fromber's got a guy.
Sports psychologist should be involved. There's no doubt.
Fromber's got a guy for Jake Myers. Don't worry about Jake. Fromber's guy has got him covered. Oh, you know what my fear with Jake is, actually? Is my fear with Jake is that he's going to be forever symbolized as James Click's guy. And that a lot of people in the city and a lot of the fan base is never going to like give Jake Myers a fair shot because he's going to be symbolized as James Click's guy. And that's something that like kind of concerns me. Because if Myers turns out to be a pretty good baseball player, I don't feel like he's going to have the fan support of a Chaz McCormick who made a legendary play in the World Series and one of the greatest catchers in franchise history. So that's something that kind of concerns me a little bit with Jake.
I don't know that I would be that worried about that, because as much as people can point fingers and really look at it as a negative James Click, you know, in James Click discussions, I think, you know, he found Jiner Diaz. I mean, and got him involved in that trade. I mean, he's done some things. Look, I mean, he was fully confident that Jeremy Peña was going to be the guy from day one when Correa left and walked out and they decided not to pay him. I don't know that being James Click's guy is that big of a negative. If you can play, you can play.
Mm-hmm. But if he's tied with Chaz McCormick, who gets the nod with the fan base?
In the fan base vote? Yeah.
Dusty, I don't think, likes either one, to be honest.
I was going
to
say, Dusty, I think he leans Chaz.
Dusty's going to be all over Pedro Leon. He's going to be toolsy. He's going to have pop. He's going to have speed. He's not going to be able to hit
the
baseball.
But he's not a veteran. And I think Dusty's opinion changed in the playoffs.
I mean, Jose Siri wasn't a veteran either. Jose Siri was his favorite center fielder.
I think that Dusty's opinion on Chaz changed because of the playoffs. because of the run late and what he did in the playoffs for him. And people, with all the different storylines of the World Series and the playoff run, they lose sight of the fact that Jazz was pretty good in the World Series. And from the bat perspective, he made the catch in Philadelphia as well, that I think Dusty's perception of Chaz might have changed.
He had some heroic moments. I don't know if you should use those heroic moments to make long-term judgments of the organization. But as it relates to Varsho, and people are like asking us what we would like, they're sending these proposals in. 0029, I don't like Varsho for Garcia or Urquidy. What do you think? To me, it's a hard no for any of the top five starting pitchers. I'm talking Javier, Fromber, obviously. I'm talking Hunter Brown, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers. The one person that I would think about would be Jose Urquidy. Jose Urquidy is the odd man out. That doesn't mean I would do it. In fact, I wouldn't do it. I like the surplus of what the Astros have in the starting rotation. I think it's something that they can, you know, hang their hat on. You're going to have somebody that misses some starts, if not the entire season, in that starting rotation. It'd be good to already have somebody that's a reliable option. I don't think you should be always trading from a strength to cover up some weaknesses in other areas. And while I like Dalton Varsho, I don't think that he's this left fielder that's going to be in the middle of the order for your team. I think he's a good offensive player. I don't think he's a great offensive player. I wouldn't trade any of my starters for Dalton Varsho. I would be looking at best at some like B-level prospects, and ultimately I don't think it's enough to get it done.
No, and as long as they've said that they've got several prospects that are on the market that teams are interested in, if there's competition, I don't think the Astros, as I stated, should give up any of their starting pitchers that are on the major league level currently. And I would consider long and hard. The only reason why I would consider whether it be one of the, either Corey Lee and or Jiner Diaz would be if there are aspirations within the organization to use Varsha more at catcher as well as outfielder. But overall, I mean, what is he, the 76th rated prospect in baseball right now or something like that?
Who's
out
that?
Of the top 100, Varsho?
Varsho's not a prospect. Well, Varsho's been in the bigs for three years.
Well, I know, but they've been rating. I saw some rating yesterday that I was reading about. Like in terms of young players, maybe it was at a certain age in the major leagues or something.
Could have been, yeah.
But for whatever the case, I don't look at Varsho as a catcher either, and I don't look at them giving up any starting pitching that's currently on the roster for him.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, 7218, trade for Pirates center fielder. He's talking about Brian Reynolds. I think that price is going to be a whole lot. I want the Astros to just spend their money to sign a left fielder DH, and I'm not too picky on who the left fielder DH is. Alex asked us on Twitch, if the Astros don't sign an outfielder before January, do you think that they're waiting for Brantley? I think it's a great point. I think it's a really good look at the timeline. I do believe that, actually. I think if the Astros don't get something done, maybe February. I might push the timeline back a month because Conforto hasn't signed, Benintendi hasn't signed, so there's still like a decent market for corner outfielders that are out there. So I might push the timeline back to February, but I think there's a better than decent chance that the Astros do end up with Michael Brantley as that left field DH.
The only thing that concerns me about that, because we've heard and discussed on the show that it might be March at some point before you find out truly that Michael Brantley is ready to go and has passed all the health concerns. And you need an insurance policy. If Michael Brantley can't go, or there's something that's a red flag that says maybe we got to pad the brakes on this and this isn't the way we can go right now with Uncle Mike, is there going to be anybody left? Is there going to be another option, a plan B, per se? Because everybody is now, the market's starting to dry up. And, like you mentioned, those are two guys that are still in the market. Benintendi was rumored to be going to the Rangers, I saw this morning on ESPN, of the prospects remaining. So, not the prospects, free agents remaining. So teams are still really, really active, and it's a tough situation to say, we love Uncle Mike, we'd love Uncle Mike back, but we don't know what Uncle Mike we're getting, and we got to wait till March.
See, I think it's the gamble you have to take. Like, if you're deciding on Brantley now, then you're just taking that gamble, because by the time you get to March to see if he is healthy enough, like, Benintendi's going to sign, Conforto's going to sign. So, like, you're probably not going to get an idea where Brantley's at until then. But you have to make the decision now. Like, you either roll the dice with Benintendi or Conforto and you say, sorry, Brantley, we're not going to do it, or you just wait for Michael Brantley. And Brantley might be the plan B if you don't have the money to sign Benintendi or Conforto, or don't want to spend the money on Benintendi and Conforto. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Cash it or trash it. We're going to sell some cash in or trash, and it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, Fitz is the best in the business when it comes to roofing issues and fixing roofing problems. It could be a leaky roof. It could be a whole new roof on your home, your business, your commercial project. Look, they take care of you every step of the way. And the main things that you need to know is, one, Corey's not only the owner, he's the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association. You don't get that kind of title and belief from your peers if you don't know what you're doing. He knows what he's doing. He's an expert in his field, and that's just another reason why you go to Fitz. On top of that, Fitz, known for using the best products in the business, starting with CertainTeed shingles, having the best warranties in the business, and the best ratings in the business. And that is Facebook, Home Advisor, and others. They are going to be there for you beginning to end with any deal they're doing with you. They put a fence in my yard. They were fantastic. They do home repairs as well. Best thing you can do is go to FITZroofing.com, see all the services that they offer. And then if you got something going on, the other great thing about Fitz is they're not going to charge you $75 to $100 just to come to your house and check it out and see what they can do. They have free, no-obligation inspections of what's going on. All you need to do is call them, 832-521-3001. They come to you and tell you what they can do. And if you want them to come back, just book the actual project and job. They are going to do fantastic work, like I said, start to finish. Check them out. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.